not entirely. It wasn't exactly the celebratory welcome home that I'd been anticipating. The men led me to a command chamber with a large view screen on the wall and several dozen small computer stations underneath, where members of flight command monitored individual flights and kept tabs on the enemy. They'd been busy while I was gone. The whole operation looked more smooth, with far fewer exposed panels than I remembered. Several junior admirals were directing the battle from command positions. Cobb stood behind them at the back of the room, looking distinguished in his white uniform, his silvery mustache bristling from his upper lip. They'd given him an imposing admiral's throne that overlooked everything. He used the seat to hold several stacks of paper and the armrest for his coffee as he inspected reports and muttered to himself. "Nightshade?" he asked as the guards marched me up. "What the hell have you done here? Wasn't the mission Jorgen sent you on to be a stealth mission? You look like you've damn near brought the entire superiority down on us." For some reason, hearing Cobb swear at me was the most comforting thing that could have happened to me right then. I let out a soft sigh. My entire universe was turning upside down, but Cobb was as constant as a star, an angry, surly star that drank too much coffee. "Sorry, Cobb," I said. "I got involved in superiority politics and, well, I don't think I'm entirely to blame for this attack, but my actions did seem to provide some excuses for them to come here."
"You should have come back sooner."
"I couldn't. My powers, I'm learning, but, I mean, you try to learn how to teleport using your brain. It's not as easy as it sounds."
"Sounds scudding hard."
"That's my point." He grunted.
"And the mission? The one you two made up without proper authorization?"
"It worked. I pretended to be that alien who crashed here. I used M-Bot's holograms to pull it off and lived among the superiority long enough to figure out the secret of their hyperdrives." I grimaced. I might have screwed things up here and there.
"Well, you wouldn't be you if you didn't make my life more difficult at every turn, Spin."
He nodded to the guards and they withdrew. This conversation had in part been a test, and I'd passed it. Cobb was reasonably sure that I wasn't an imposter. Cobb took a sip of his coffee and waved me closer.
"What's really going on out there?"
"The superiority has a bunch of factions. I didn't learn much, it's kind of over my head, but a military faction is reaching for power, and they're going to try to exterminate us to bolster their credibility. Getting rid of the human scourge as a way of proving themselves." On the screen at the front, which held an abstract battle map with dots of light representing ships, the Weights and Measures was deploying flights of fighters. It looked like several hundred drones of the normal style we fought, and 50 other ships glowing brighter than the rest.
"Piloted ships," Cobb said. "Enemy aces, 50 of them."
"They're not aces," I said, "but they are piloted ships. The superiority has been preparing a group of real pilots to fight us. I, trained some of them." Cobb's cup stopped halfway to his lips.
"You really managed to join their space force and train with them?"
Yes, sir.
"Damn. And that ship you stole? It has a hyperdrive?"
"No, but I know the secret. You know that yellow slug pet I have? The one I found in M-Bot's cave? Those are what the superiority uses to hyperjump. We need to send an expedition into the caverns on Detritus and see if we can catch any others."
"I'll put several teams on it immediately, assuming we survive this battle. Any other bombs you want to drop on me?"
I, revealed myself to one of the highest functionaries in the superiority government, and we got along pretty well. I think we might be able to leverage this other faction in the government into making peace with us. Assuming we survive the aforementioned battle.
"And your ship? The one with the annoying attitude?"
I felt a spike of shame inside me. "I left him behind, sir. And Doomslug. I was being chased by enemies, and they were getting close, and—"
"It's all right, soldier,"
Cobb said.
You're back, which is more than we had any right to expect.
He turned his eyes toward the screen and the growing flood of little blips of light.
I want you in a debriefing room with a recorder, telling us everything you can remember about their military capacities. I'll stay here and do what I can to survive this invasion. Scud, that's a lot of fighters.
Cobb, I said, stepping closer. Those aren't bloodthirsty monsters out there. They're just people. Normal people with lives and loves and families.
And what did you think we've been fighting against all these years?
Cobb asked. I didn't know. Red-eyed, faceless creatures, relentless destroyers. Not far from how they saw humans.
That's what war is, Cobb told me. A bunch of sorry, desperate fools on both sides, just trying to stay alive. That's the part that those stories you love leave out, isn't it? It's always more convenient when you can fight a dragon. Something you don't have to worry you'll start caring about.
But he took me by the arm, then moved some papers and gently steered me to sit in his chair. He didn't banish me immediately to that debriefing. Perhaps he wanted me around to answer questions. I sagged in the seat, watching as he stepped forward to take command. He was far better at that than one might assume. He didn't try to do it all himself. He let the other admirals, ones he'd handpicked for their combat sense, lead the individual segments of the battle. He only intruded when he felt he needed to. Mostly, he limped around the room, sipping his coffee and offering pointers here and there. I watched the swarm of ships approach one another. I tried to sink farther down into my seat as I watched. Red and blue blips on a screen. But some of those blips were people I loved dearly. People on both sides. Was Morimer out there, terrified but determined? Hesho and the Kitsin? Would Kimmelin shoot them down? This wasn't right. This couldn't happen. And it was also wrong. Not just wrong morally, wrong tactically. I stared up at the battle maps, and the superiority side looked impressive. 200 drones, 50 manned ships. Our own force of scrambled fighters would only number around 150. But we were the DDF, battle-forged and growing in skill each day, while the superiority fielded drone pilots trained to be non-aggressive, and a group of new recruits with only a couple weeks in the cockpit. Winzik had to know his forces were actually at a disadvantage. He also knows we're growing stronger each day, and now, after finding the remnants of my destructor pistol, fears we've been able to get to Starsight. He knows we have cytonics. He knows we were spying on his operations. I suddenly saw a different cast to this battle. I saw a terrified Winzik realizing that his prisoners were out of control, that the threat he'd often used to scare the rest of the superiority was actually real. So what was his plan here? It had to be more than just letting his fledgling space force die to our destructors. As the two groups of fighters began to engage, I strained to put together what the Krell leader might be planning. Unfortunately, I'd never been the one to worry about large-scale tactics. My job was to get in the cockpit and start shooting. Sure, I could think on my feet and win a battle, but today I needed to be more. I understood the enemy better than anyone else. I'd lived among them. I'd talked to their general, listened to his orders. What was he doing here, today? I watched the battle, and slowly I stood up from the seat, the admiral's chair, where I loomed over the entire room. I stared at the blips on the screen and saw the people beyond them. I felt the world fading slightly around me. I saw and heard stars.
Reporting live from the Detritus Refuge. Brave fighters, hoping to hold back the human scourge.
Winzik was broadcasting these events. This attack was theatrics. I imagined millions of people back on Starsight, watching the broadcast in fear. Winzik could destroy his reputation by failing here. And he would, wouldn't he? He couldn't defeat us. reports that the humans are doing something strange. This refuge, which is surrounded by ancient mechanisms, remnants from the Second Human War. The movement of those platforms, something seems to be happening. Beyond it all, I heard something else, like a building scream. Or a challenge? Was that Braid, screaming into the nowhere? She couldn't do that. It would draw the eyes. It snapped into focus. The things I was hearing, Kuna's warnings, Braid's explanations from earlier, Winzik's plan. They were going to intentionally bring a Delver into our realm. A few of the people in the room noticed me, and Rakulfer nudged Cobb.
Spin?
The Admiral asked, stepping up. I need to go, sir, I said, still staring at the battle map.
I don't know if we can risk you, he said. None of our other ships can protect your brain from cytonic attacks. Besides, we don't know if we can get any of these hyperspace slugs you mention. So, well, you might be needed soon.
I'm needed right now, I said. I looked down at him. Something terrible is about to happen. I don't think I can explain it to you. I don't have the time, but I have to stop it.
Go, he told me. We might be able to defeat the fighters, but those battleships, now that they've finally decided to throw everything at us, our time is running out. So if you can do something, well, go. Saints watch over you.
I was off and running toward the hall before he even finished. Chapter 39. As I ran, I felt the shadow grow stronger inside me. By approaching the nowhere to listen, I'd let more of it in. The thoughts of the Delvers, they touched the part of me that I couldn't explain. This part of me hated everyone, the buzzing noises people made, the clicks and the disruption of the pure calm void that was space. The human inside me fought back. It saw lives behind the blips on the screen. It had flown with the enemy and had found friends in them. I didn't understand myself. How could I be both of these things at once? How could I want to stop the fighting, but at the same time hope they'd all just destroy themselves? I exploded from the bay of Platform Prime, flying my superiority ship, as it was the only ship not in use at the moment. Cobb really was worried. He'd mobilized every fighter we had. Following a provided course through the shells around Detritus, I accelerated constantly, my back pressing into the seat. Eventually, I emerged into space beyond the shells and confronted the chaos of hundreds of ships fighting at once. Destructor blasts tore streaks through the blackness, and ships exploded with flashes of light that were quickly extinguished. In the distance, the weights and measures watched stoically alongside the two battleships. I thought I understood Winzik's plan, and it had a kind of twisted brilliance to it. He needed to exterminate the humans of Detritus. By escaping, we were coming too close to proving him weak or even a fraud, but he didn't yet have the space force he needed to do the job himself. At the same time, he needed a Delver in our realm that he could control and use as a threat. He couldn't be seen summoning it himself, however. So what did he do? He sent his forces to Detritus to bravely fight the humans. Then he secretly had Braid draw a Delver into our realm and let it destroy Detritus. He could blame the summoning on us. After all, everyone knew the humans had tried to do this once before. After consuming the humans, the Delver would move on, searching for other prey. But Winzik could use his newly trained space force to control it, send it someplace safe, bounce it between unpopulated worlds. In so doing, he'd become a hero, and the most important being in the galaxy. Because with a roving Delver threatening all the civilized worlds, only his force would provide any protection. His pilots would be on call to defend planets who asked for them, but if someone opposed him, well, the Delver might just find its way to their region with no defense force to send it away. Brutal. Effective. Terrifying. I boosted toward the fight, where starfighters spun and dodged, blasted and fought. Where was Braid? I could hear her shouting into the nowhere, but I couldn't sense where. Would she be on the Weights and Measures? No, they wouldn't want the thing to come into our realm near one of their ships. She'll be out here somewhere. But where? This battle was several times larger than any I'd been in before. Probably larger, I realized, than anyone in this fight had ever seen. The battlefield was quickly devolving into chaos as flights tried to stick together and admirals frantically tried to keep a coherent strategy. A familiar sense of excitement built inside me, the anticipation of the fight, the opportunity to push myself. But today it was accompanied by a hesitance I might once have called cowardice. I silently thanked Cobb for beating that out of me during training. I wasn't here to fight. So instead of firing on the first superiority drone that passed by, I studied my proximity monitor and realized that it was still attuned to superiority signals. They'd blocked me from their general communications chatter, so I couldn't hear what they were saying to one another, but I could still highlight individual ships and designations on my monitor. I picked out a specific starfighter flying mostly by itself near the far right side of the battlefield. The swims against the current in a stream reflecting the sun. Hesho's ship. My old flight. They might know where Braid was. But Hesho and I were enemies now. He knew me for what I really was, the thing that he hated. I steered my ship that direction anyway. I zipped down through the battlefield to avoid the shots of several drones, then the shots of several DDF fighters, who obviously hadn't believed my signal code that identified me as an ally. The drones and the DDF fighters ended up engaging one another, which left me to swing around toward Hesho. The Kitson turned their ship toward mine, and I stopped a good distance away, slowing down until I was motionless in space. Now what? I tried opening a private channel to the Kitson ship. "Hesho," I said. "I'm sorry." No response. Indeed, the ship powered up its destructors and started toward me. I could practically hear the orders on board as Hesho commanded the Kitson to prepare for battle. My fingers twitched on my controls. They thought they could take me? Did they really want to push me to sea? They were insignificant, meaningless noises upon a vast... No. I took my hand off my control sphere and checked the seals on my helmet. Then I popped my canopy open. The air in my canopy was sucked out into the void in a rush of wind. Water in the air immediately vaporized, then froze, causing frost to condense across the inside of the glass. Crystals of it sparkled in the air, reflecting the light of the distant sun. I undid the latches on my seat, all except the one cord that would pull tight to lock my feet into place if I ejected. That one had some slack right now and tethered me to the cockpit. I floated out, closing my eyes. I imagined I was soaring. Free. Me, the void, and the stars. Those sang distant songs, but there was a louder noise growing nearby, at the back of the battlefield. It was building. The Delver was coming.
"What are you doing?" Hesho's voice said in my ear. "Get back into your ship so we can engage in combat."
"No," I whispered.
"This is foolishness, Alanik. Or whatever your real name is. I am warning you. We will not delay our fire simply because you are indisposed."
"I promised you, Hesho," I said. "Remember? First shot at a human is yours." I opened my eyes to the surreal scene of emptiness all around. I'd always known it was there. I'd flown through it. But for some reason, being out of my ship, with only the suit to keep me from the vacuum, made it all more real to me. Once, I'd looked up at the sky and been awed by it. Now it engulfed me, consumed me. There didn't seem to be a line between me and it. We were one. It was pierced in the nowhere by whatever Braid was doing, a shout projected into the nowhere, a dangerous scream. Hesho's ship hovered up in front of me, mere meters away, destructor turrets trained on me. I stared back at them.
"You speak of promises," Hesho said, "when all you ever gave me were lies.
I was always the same person, Hesho, I said. You never knew Alanik. You only knew me.
A human.
An ally, I said. Back when we were pilots together, you spoke to me about a shared desire to resist the superiority and find our own way to use hyperdrives. I have the secret, Hesho. I found it. You can take it back to your people.
Why should I believe you?
Why should you believe them? I asked. You know I'm not the monster they say I am. You flew with me. Our people were allies once, long ago. You know the superiority doesn't care about your kind. Come with me. Help me. No response. I reached out to the ship. Hesho, I whispered. Winzik is planning something terrible. I think he's going to use Braid to summon a Delver. If that's true, I need your help. The entire galaxy needs your help. We don't need just a ship's captain right now. We need a hero. Beyond us, the battle raged. Two forces of frightened people, each with no choice but to kill the other. It was either that or die.
I don't know what to do, Hesho said.
Maybe, Kaori's voice said from the background. You could ask us.
The comm went dead. I hung there, floating in space just above my ship. Then finally, Hesho spoke again.
Apparently, Hesho said, my crew does not want to shoot you. I have been overruled. What a curious experience. Very well, Alanik. We will ally for a short time. Long enough for us to learn whether you are telling us the truth or not.
Thank you, I said, feeling a sense of relief. Then I tugged with my foot, yanking myself back toward the cockpit. Where are the others? Mormer? I braced myself to hear that they'd been shot down. After all, why else would the Kitsin be out here by themselves?
Mormer did not come, Hesho said. They decided at the last minute that their time as a pilot was done, and so returned to their family. Vapor is out here somewhere. I lost her in the fighting. Braid!
You're right about this, Alanik, Kaori said from the bridge. Braid is doing something strange. We're supposed to distract the human fighters and keep them away from her. She's secretly flying closer to your planet.
I can feel her, I said, locking myself back into place and repressurizing my cockpit. But I can't locate her. This is bad. Very, very bad. We need to stop her.
By joining you, Hesho said, we will be committing treason against the superiority.
Hesho, I said, part of the reason everyone hates my kind is because several hundred years ago, humans tried to turn the Delvers into weapons. Are you really going to sit there and ignore the fact that the superiority is about to try to do the very same thing? The humans of Detritus had failed in their attempt to control a Delver. I'd watched them die. Winzik was confident he wouldn't suffer the same fate, but I didn't believe that for a moment. I'd felt the Delvers. Their ideas kept trying to worm their way into my brain even now. He could not control them. If his plan succeeded, the Delver would escape his control, just like we humans were threatening to do. I exploded across the battlefield, and the swims upstream followed.
Surely they wouldn't be so foolhardy as to play with this danger, Hesho said to me. Surely there's another explanation for what Braid is doing.
They're terrified of humans, Hesho, I said. And Winzik needs a decisive victory here to prove to the superiority how powerful he is. Think about it. Why train a force to fight Delvers when it's been decades since anyone saw one? The weapon Winzik developed is really just a way to point the Delvers where he wants them. This isn't about just Detritus. It's about him finding a way to control the entire galaxy.
If this is true, Hesho said, then the superiority will become even more dominant than they are now. You said you know the secret of their hyperdrives. Will you give it to us as proof of your good faith?
I debated only a moment. Yes, this secret was important, but people controlling it and keeping it from others was part of the problem. Look up a species of slug called a Tanix. The Superiority claims they're dangerous and should be reported immediately if spotted. But this is because they're cytonic, and the Superiority doesn't want people to know. Using them somehow, the Superiority can teleport their ships without drawing the attention of Delvers.
By the ancient songs, Hesha whispered. There was a small colony of them on our planet. The Superiority sent a force to helpfully exterminate them, supposedly before the outbreak could destroy us. Those rats. Here, I have the battle plans from the Weights and Measures. We should be able to use this to deduce where Braid is. They needed to get her close to your planet.
So the Delver would attack Detritus first, I said, instead of going after the Superiority ships.
I have it,
one of the Kitsin said from the bridge. I thought it was Hana.
From the layout of the battle, I suspect Braid's ship should be at the coordinates I'm relaying to your monitor, Alanique.
We turned in that direction, though it required cutting through the middle of the increasingly frantic battlefield. We dodged around a set of DDF fighters with Nightstorm flight markings, then through some ship debris that made my shield flash. We were picking up speed when a handful of Krell drones fell in behind us.
The Weights and Measures has finally spotted us, Captain,
a Kitsin called over the line.
They're demanding to know what we're doing.
Stall,
Hesho said. I didn't know if that would do any good. They'd noticed me, judging by the way the drones were starting to fly in after us. I hit my overburn, but this ship just wasn't built like Embot. She was serviceable, but she wasn't exceptional. And the Kitsin ship was even slower. As we fell into defensive maneuvers, I was made specifically thankful that I'd forced the Kitsin and the others to do dogfighting exercises. We were likely only surviving because the battlefield was so frantic. Drone pilots had difficulty tracking us, and even more difficulty breaking away without immediately getting shot down. Somehow we made it, and I picked out a solitary black fighter flying with expert precision. Braid. But she wasn't quite in the place that the battle plan indicated. Instead, she was fighting against a drone for some reason. As we watched, Braid scored a series of hits on the drone, overwhelming its shield and destroying it. Hesho and I gave chase, followed in turn by a few more drones. I could hear the sound of Braid's mind growing louder, an increasingly demanding cytonic scream. The power of it made me tremble, and that interfered with my ability to fly, as it took me a moment to notice that one of the drones chasing us was behaving oddly. It fell out of line with the other two, then shot them down from behind.
So, Vapor said over a private channel to my ship. You're from this planet, not Redon? A human from one of the preserves. Does Kuna know?
I told them, I said, adding her to the line with Hesho, right before this mess happened. I'm sorry, Vapor, for lying.
I don't really care, Vapor said. I should have guessed the full truth. Anyway, my mission was, and still is, to keep a watch on Winzik and his minions. Is Braid doing what I think she's doing?
She's trying to summon a Delver, I said. She's calling to them. Well, more like screaming at them. I get the feeling she hasn't done this before. I glanced at my canopy, and alongside the growing headache I felt from Braid's yelling, I started to see their reflections. The eyes opening up, looking at us from the nowhere. It's working, I added to the others. The Delvers are watching us right now. I can feel them stirring. Vapor said a string of words that my pin simply translated as increasingly vulgar curses involving foul stenches.
I didn't think they'd go this far, Vapor said. This is bad. Many would call this treason against the Superiority.
She was silent for a moment.
Others would call it true patriotism.
Surely there can't be many of those,
Hesho said.
It will probably depend on whether this attack works, Vapor said. A lot of people in the Superiority really hate humans, and policy often favors the successful. Does he have a plan for sending the thing away after he summons it?
I think he just plans to use his Space Force to keep it distracted, I said. Braid indicated that Delvers in our realm would sometimes spend years between attacks.
Sometimes they would, Vapor replied. But sometimes they'd attack relentlessly. This is extremely short-sighted.
She fell in on my left, Hesho on my right, as I steered my ship after Braid. She was making for the shells around Detritus, trying to get as close to the planet as she could. Knowing where she was going gave us a slight advantage, as we could aim to head her off. I set us on that heading, but a distressing thought occurred to me. I wasn't certain the three of us could stop Braid. She was good, even better than I was. Plus, a Delver could appear at any moment. Maybe I could do something to mitigate the disaster of that occurring. I called in on the general DDF line. Flight Command, this is Spin. I need to talk to Cobb.
I'm here,
Cobb said in my ear. I need you to turn off all communications with ships out here. Have every DDF ship go silent. Turn off all radios in Alta. Maybe even power down Platform Prime and go dark. I braced myself for an argument, but Cobb was strikingly calm when he replied,
You realize, Spin, that would mean leaving all of the pilots to fight on their own. No coordination, no ground support, not even the ability to call for help from wingmates.
I realize that, sir.
I would want to be absolutely certain it was necessary before taking such an extreme action.
Sir, one of them is coming. A Delver.
I see.
Cobb didn't curse or shout or even complain. His calm tone was somehow far, far more disturbing.
I'll warn the pilots, then initiate communications silence. Stars watch over you, Lieutenant, and the rest of us sorry souls.
He cut the line. I felt a chill, a mounting horror, as Braid, like I'd hoped, turned toward us. We were seconds from intercepting her.
Vapor, Hesho asked. Can you take over her ship, like you've done with the drones?
It's harder for a crewed ship than it is for a drone, Vapor said. She'll have a manual override, developed for resisting my kind. I could probably lock her out of flight control and force the ship to go immobile, for a little time at least. I need to touch her ship, which will mean ejecting from this drone and trying to get to her. So far, she has known to stay away from ships I'm flying and hasn't let me get within range of seizing her vessel.
Understood, I said. Be ready to try. I didn't order radio silence among the three of us. I hoped to protect Detritus, but for now our communication was vital to our last-ditch attempt at stopping this. By shooting down one of my friends. I opened a line to her as our ships drew closer. Braid, you know why we're here.
I know, she said softly. I don't blame you. You were born to kill.
No, Braid.
I should have seen what you were. I knew you felt it. The need to destroy, like a dragon coiled inside, stoking its flame. Waiting to strike, longing to strike, lusting to strike.
Please, don't make us do this.
What, and give up the fight? She said. Admit it. You've been wondering all along, haven't you? Which of us is better? Well, let's find out.
I gritted my teeth, then switched back to the private channel to Hesho and Vapor. All right, team. We need to take her out. Her screaming mind echoed in my brain, louder than her words had been. And we can't simply shoot to disable. She'll keep trying to bring that Delver as long as she's alive. So if you have the chance, kill her. Chapter 40. We split apart as we drew close, the three of us trying to swing around and coordinate an attack from all sides. I swooped down closer to the shell around the planet, anticipating, correctly, that Braid would dodge that way first. Her screaming grew softer as we forced her to concentrate on her flying. I could feel that I was right about her. She didn't know how to do this, not fully. She could project a scream into the nowhere, and I could see Delverize watching from the reflection in my canopy. But whatever crucial step remained in bringing one here, Braid hadn't figured it out yet. Likely, she'd assumed it would be easy. Each time I went into the nowhere, I worried one of these things would pounce on me, or worse, follow me out. Fortunately, it didn't seem quite so easy to pull one through. At my mark, the three of us cut in, trying to hit Braid from every angle. I anticipated that she'd accelerate and get out of the way. Instead, she spun around and didn't dodge at all, letting our destructor blasts hit her. What? The maneuver put us too close to her. By instinct, I spun my ship and tried to boost away, but wasn't able to do so before Braid hit her IMP, breaking down everyone's shields. Scud. That was what I would have done, and I'd fallen right into it. Always before, I had been the single pilot fighting against superior numbers. I didn't know how to think from the other direction, as someone trying to gang up on a single ship. Warnings blared on my dash as I belatedly boosted away. The Kitson, who had dedicated gunners, got off some shots at Braid as she zipped off, but none landed. I looped around, picking up Vapor as a wingmate. In the near distance, the enormous space battle continued, and I could sense a more frantic feel to it. Perhaps that was my own interpretation, but it seemed as if the fighters were more desperate. I tried not to think about how Kimmelin and the others must feel to suddenly fight blindly, without communications. Braid tried to bolt away, flying in closer to the defensive platforms. Enormous sheets of metal curved into the distance as we swooped down, but I refused to be caught in a trap like I had once used against drones. Vapor and I stayed out of range of the defensive guns until Braid was forced by their shots to pull up. She couldn't let us fall too far behind, or we'd have a chance to reignite our shields. Indeed, as I tried, she came right at me, forcing me to go into a defensive pattern. I had to abandon reignition, since I would need time flying straight, without much maneuverability and all power diverted to the igniter, to get my shield back up. Hesho, I said over the private line, on me. Vapor, take a sniping position and be ready to shoot her while we distract her.
Affirmative,
both of them said, Vapor falling back and Hesho coming in beside me. Braid swooped around, and we intercepted her with destructors blaring. We couldn't aim very well, sweeping in as we were. We just needed to distract her from Vapor. Again, she anticipated our tactics. Instead of engaging me and Hesho, she spun backward in a reversal that must have seen her pulling 10 or 15 Gs. I swooped around, but by the time I got on her tail, she was already firing at Vapor. Vapor tried to dodge, but one of the shots caught her. The wing blasted off her ship, which wouldn't have been deadly in space, but the next shot ripped apart her hull, venting the cockpit, including her. She can survive that, I thought at myself forcibly, firing at Braid. I came so close to hitting her, the shots narrowly missing her canopy as she dodged around, weaving between my destructor blasts. Braid got off a shot as she turned, and it nailed the swims upstream.
We're hit, a Kitson voice shouted. Lord Hesho!
A dozen other Kitson voices cried out reports, and the swims upstream floundered, venting air. I couldn't focus on that, unfortunately. I gritted my teeth and got in behind Braid. The scream in my mind slacked off even further as the dogfight narrowed to just the two of us. Woman against woman, pilot against pilot. We swooped past some ancient rubble, spinning and tumbling, trapped in orbit, and Braid pivoted around it with her light lance. I followed, staying on her, but just barely. We spun through the darkness, neither of us firing, focused only on the chase. I had the upper hand from the rear position, but saints, she was good. All else faded. World beneath me, stars above, set against the backdrop of a terrible battle. None of it mattered. The two of us were a pair of sharks chasing one another through a sea of minnows. She managed to draw me in close to the defensive platforms, then loop around me as I was forced to dodge a shot. I stayed ahead of her in turn, then threw us both into a spiral where I barely managed to cut out and swing around her, taking position on her tail again. It was thrilling, invigorating. I felt as I rarely had before, challenged to the absolute limits of my ability. And Braid was better. She stayed just ahead of me and dodged each shot I took. I found that exhilarating. I'd often been the best pilot in the sky. Seeing someone who was better was perhaps the most inspiring thing I'd ever experienced. I wanted to fly with her, chase her, pit myself against her until I covered that distance and matched her. But as I was grinning, I again heard her screaming into the nowhere. It was faint, but in its wake, my illusion of enjoyment came crashing down. Braid was trying to destroy everything I loved. If I couldn't stop her, if I wasn't good enough, that spelled the end of the DDF, detritus, and humankind itself. In that light, my inability was terrifying. I don't have to beat her alone, I thought. I just have to get her to go where I want. I broke off and darted away. I could feel Braid's annoyance. She'd been enjoying this too, and suddenly she felt angry at me for my cowardice. I was running? She gave immediate chase, firing at me. I had to stay ahead for only a short while longer. I dodged around a specific collection of space debris, and Braid followed. I held my breath.
Got her,
Vapor said over Braid's own channel. I spun my ship around and boosted back toward Braid's ship, which had followed me through the rubble of Vapor's destroyed drone as it slowed. I could see right into the cockpit, where she pounded on her console in frustration. Her ship powered off anyway, Vapor locking down the systems. We had her. I slowed my own ship, then pointed the nose right at Braid. My own words seemed to echo back at me. We can't simply shoot to disable. She'll keep on trying to bring that Delver as long as she's alive. As if in direct proof of that, she met my gaze, then projected a scream into the nowhere. The eyes, which had been fading, snapped their attention back on us, particularly one pair that seemed larger than all the rest. I squeezed the trigger. In that moment, Braid's scream went shriller than it ever had before. In the panic of knowing she would die, Braid finally accomplished her goal. And something emerged from the nowhere. Chapter 41. The Delver's emergence distorted reality. In one blink of an eye, Braid's ship went from being in front of me to being shoved aside. Something vast entering our realm pushed us back, like we were riding a wave rippling through reality itself. The shot I'd taken at Braid missed, and was instead absorbed by the expanding blackness. My ship rocked as I was thrust away. The blackness grew so large that it dominated my view. I thought I saw the core of the Delver for a moment, that deep shadow, an absolute darkness that seemed too pure to actually exist. And then the maze appeared, matter coalescing around the thing like condensation forming on a very cold pipe. It grew around the core, shooting out terrible spires, gathering to be the size of a small planet, much larger than the maze we'd trained in. That maze was soon shrouded in dust and particulate matter, a haze that obscured it. Dark spires cast shadows within, lit by flares of deep red, the color of molten stone. Storms of terrible colors and mind-bending shadows. A vast, nearly incomprehensible thing hidden within the floating dust. This enormous thing now loomed like a moon over detritus, far too close. My sensors went crazy. The Delver had its own gravitational pull. 2 weeks ago, I'd watched a recording of a thing like this consuming the old inhabitants of detritus. Now I cowered before one in real life. A speck. We were all specks to this creature. My hands fell limp from my controls. I'd failed. And I was pretty sure that the very action I'd taken to stop this, shooting at Braid, had given her the push to achieve her goal. I felt a sudden, crushing sense of hopelessness. This thing was so immense and strange. Then another emotion pushed through the despair. Anger. We'd die here. Everyone in the Defiant Caverns, while the people of Starsight ate and laughed and ignored what their own government was doing. It didn't seem fair. Those insects, those bugs that slobbered and skittered and clicked and... Wait. I pushed through those overwhelming emotions. That wasn't me. That wasn't how I was feeling. The battle had stilled. Detritus had gone silent, as I'd ordered. It was as if the entire planet held its breath. A mind, vast, incomprehensible mind, brushed against mine. Something so oppressive it threatened to crush me. There's nothing here, I thought in a panic. Nothing to destroy, you see? No buzzing, no annoyances here. Go somewhere else. Go that way. I fed it a destination, not really by intent, more like the way you'd throw something hot after touching it unexpectedly. I pointed it toward a place in the far distance, the direction where Winzik's broadcast was going, the direction where the stars were singing. I felt the Delver's attention turn. Yes, there were things nearby, superiority ships, making noise, but it wanted something larger. It could hear that distant destination, the place where I'd nudged its attention. It vanished, following that distant song. I was sucked forward by the ripple in reality, same as I'd been pushed back by it earlier. Sweat beaded on the sides of my face as confusion fought relief. It was gone. Just like that, it was gone. I had sent it to destroy Starsight instead. Chapter 42.
Hello?
A Kitson voice said over my comm. I stared out into the void, numb.
Alanique, I don't actually know what your name is. It's me, Kaori. We sustained great losses. Lord Hesho is dead. I've taken command, but I don't know what to do.
Hesho? Dead? The Kitson ship hovered up by mine. A black gouge had been blasted out of the side, but the crew had patched it with a shield.
The superiority forces are retreating, Vapor said. Ships are disengaging from the humans and flying back toward the weights and measures. Perhaps they are frightened now that their terrible weapon has failed.
It didn't fail, I whispered. It's gone to Starsight instead. They didn't quiet themselves enough. They've come to rely on their communications. It heard them.
What is this? Kaori said. Could you repeat that, please? You said the Delver has gone to Starsight.
Yes. I sent it.
No, we have family on the station and crew members who are too sick for duty. There are millions of people on Starsight.
A drone hovered up beside me. Vapor had stolen herself a new ship. I barely noticed. I was watching the stars, listening to their sounds.
Winzik, that monster, Vapor said. This is exactly what happened when humans tried to control a Delver during the Second War. It turned against the very ones who'd summoned it. His broadcast of these events gave the thing a pathway right back to his home.
It had been that, yes, but more my own interference. I had done this. Saints and stars. I'd sent it to destroy them. Braid was right. We could control these things.
We can't let this,
Kaori said, sounding helpless.
Maybe we could return to the weights and measures? Have it fly us back to Starsight to fight? But the retreat is going to take time. The carrier needs to wait for those fighters to disengage. It could be half an hour before the ship gets back to the city.
Far too long. Starsight was doomed. All those people. Kuna and Mrs. Chamwit. Morimer. Because of me. I felt like the Delver had sensed my fury. Was that possible?
What have you done?
Braid demanded over the comm. I glanced to the side and saw her ship had stopped tumbling nearby.
What have you done?
What I had to, I whispered. To save my people. In so doing, I doomed another people. But would anyone blame me for that choice? I knew that even if Winzik's ships did reach the Delver in time, their weapon against it was merely a way of diverting its attention. They'd try to send it back here to destroy us instead. It was us or them. Braid's ship vanished, slipping into the nowhere.
What do we do? Vapor asked.
I don't know, Kauri said.
There was nothing to do. I reignited my shield, then leaned my head back and accepted what was happening. Leave the superiority to its own problems. They'd caused this. They deserved it. My only worry was for M'Bot and Doomslug. Surely he'd be safe. He was a ship. Regardless, what could I do? Us or them? I turned my ship around, away from the stars, to head back home. No. My hands moved off the controls. This isn't my fight, I whispered.
A hero doesn't choose her trials,
Gran-Gran's voice said. I don't know how to stop it.
A hero faces what comes next.
They hate us. They think we're only worthy of being destroyed.
Prove them wrong.
Alanik?
Kauri asked, uncertain, moving her ship up beside mine. I took a long, deep breath, then looked back at the stars.
Scud.
I couldn't abandon those people. I could not run from this fight. Bring your ships in close, I said to the Kitsun and to Vapor. Touch your wings to mine if you can.
Why?
Vapor asked, obeying. Her wing tapped mine, and the Kitsun's did so on the other side.
What are we doing?
Stepping into the darkness, I said. Then I flung us into the nowhere. Interlude. Being two people was an uncomfortable experience for Mortimer. On the left, one could argue that Mortimer had never known anything different. On the right, one could point out that one's separate halves and the memories they had inherited knew precisely how odd the experience was. Two minds thinking together, but blending memories and experiences from the past. Only some from each parent, a stew of personality and memory. Occasionally, their instincts fought against one another. Earlier in the day, Mortimer had reached to scratch their head, but both hands had tried to do it at once. And before that, at the sound of a loud bang, just a dish being dropped, Mortimer had tried to both dodge for cover and jump up to help at the same time. This disjunction was growing even worse as the two halves prepared to separate and recombine again. Mortimer stepped toward the drafting pod, passing through a double row of family members, lefts on one side, rights the other, with agendered choosing either side. They held out the appropriate hand, brushing Mortimer's own extended hands as they passed through the dark room. Mortimer was supposed to have 2.5 months left, but after leaving the Space Force, well, the decision had been made to proceed early. This draft was not right. Mortimer's parents and family agreed. Time to try again. Everyone said it wasn't supposed to feel like a farewell, and that Mortimer shouldn't see it as a rejection. Redrafting was common, and they had been assured it wouldn't hurt. Yet how could one take it as anything but a rejection?
Too aggressive, one Grand had said. This will trouble them all their life.
They chose to investigate a career very unbecoming of a Dione,
one Pibling had said.
They could never be happy like this.
These same relatives gave Mortimer fond lip draws, touching hands with them as if seeing them off on a journey. The drafting pod was much like a large bed, though with the center hollowed out. Shaped of the traditional wood with a slick polished interior, once Mortimer climbed into it, its lid would be affixed and a nutrient bath injected to help with the cocooning and redrafting process. Their eldest grand, Numiga, took both of their hands as they stepped up to the pod.
You did well, Mortimer.
If that's so, why have I failed to prove myself?
Your job wasn't to prove yourself. It was merely to exist and let us see possibilities. Come. You yourself returned to us and agreed the process needed to continue.
Mortimer's left hand gave a curved gesture of affirmation, almost on its own. They had returned, departed the docks while the others went to fight, fled because they'd been too upset to continue. Defending against Delvers was one thing, but going to shoot down other pilots? The idea horrified Mortimer.
You'd have been too frightened to fight a Delver anyway,
a part of them, perhaps one of their parents, thought.
Too aggressive for Dione society, too paranoid to fight. Redrafting is for the best.
For the best, another part of them thought.
Mortimer stumbled, feeling a disorientation caused by the two separating parts of their brain. Numiga helped them sit on the side of the drafting pod, their deep, reddish-violet skin seeming to glow in the candlelight.
It's beginning, Numiga said. It is time.
I don't want to go.
It will not hurt,
Numiga promised.
It will still be you who comes out, redrafted. Just a different you.
What if I want to be the same me?
Numiga patted them on the hand.
Almost all of us went through a few drafts, Mortimer, and we all survived it. When you emerge again, you will wonder why you were so bothered.
Mortimer nodded and put both feet into the pod. Then they paused.
When I come back out, will I remember these months?
Faintly, Numiga said, like fragments of a dream.
And my friends? Will I know their faces?
Numiga pushed them gently into the pod. It was time. Mortimer's two halves were unraveling, the minds separating, and their personalities stretched thin. It was hard to think. The chamber rocked with a sudden, extended tremble. Mortimer grabbed the side of the pod, hissing out in surprise. Around them, the others stumbled against one another, crying out or hissing. People fell as the trembling persisted, until finally it grew still. What had that been? It felt like the platform had been hit by something. But what kind of impact could be so large that it would shake all of Starsight? Outside, screams sounded in the streets. Mortimer's relatives climbed to their feet in a mess, pushing aside the drapings in front of the doorway. They opened it and let light flood the small dark chamber. Trembling, barely able to control their limbs, Mortimer crawled out of the pod. Everyone seemed to have forgotten them. What could be happening? Pulling themselves up on the equipment near the pod, Mortimer got to their feet and stumbled to the door leading outside, where many of their relatives stood staring upward in a wide-eyed stupor. A planet had somehow appeared beside Starsight. A dark, dust-shrouded thing, with terrible lines emerging from within its black center. Deep red lights played beneath the dust like eruptions of magma. It loomed over Starsight, a spectacle so vast, so unexpected, that both of Mortimer's minds reeled. How could that be there, interrupting the calming depths of space that had always been on the horizon?
It's a Delver, one mind trembled. Run!
Flee, the other mind screamed.
Around Mortimer, relatives scrambled away, running. Though how did you run from something like this? Within moments, only Mortimer was standing there before the building, alone. Their minds continued to panic, but Mortimer didn't let go, and slowly their minds relaxed and knit back together. It wouldn't last long. But for now, Mortimer looked up and exposed their teeth. Kuna gripped the rail of their balcony, trying to take in the awesome sight of the Delver.
We failed, they whispered. He's destroyed Detritus. Now he brings it here to show off his power.
The scent around them turned sharply angry, like that of wet soil.
This is a disaster, Zizin said. You said, I didn't believe. Kuna, how could Winzik do this?
Kuna gave a helpless gesture of their fingers, still staring up at the terrible sight. The awesome scale of the thing made it difficult to tell, but Kuna could feel the thing drawing closer, approaching the city.
He'll destroy us, Kuna realized. The High Minister is still in attendance. Winzik will take out the Superiority's government, leaving only himself.
No, Zizan said, smelling of hot spices. Even he is not so callous. This is a mistake, Kuna. He summoned it, but cannot control it as he assumed. It has come here of its own volition.
Yes, Kuna realized the truth of it immediately. Winzik wanted to be known as a hero. He would not destroy Starsight. This wasn't just a mistake. It was a disaster of the highest order. The same foolishness that had made the humans fall. Ships began to stream away in a panic, and Kuna wished them speed. Maybe some would escape. It was a dubious hope. Starsight was doomed, and Kuna couldn't help feeling an awful responsibility. Would Winzik have ever decided upon this course if the two of them hadn't brainstormed a potential defense force years ago? Embers began to launch from the Delver, slamming into the shield around Starsight and bursting with incredible explosions. Soon the shield would fall. The air turned a sour scent of rotting fruit, sorrow and anguish from Zizan.
Go, Kuna whispered. You might be able to move quickly enough to escape.
We will stop this from going further, Kuna, Zizan promised. We'll resist Winzik. Clean up his mess.
Go!
Zizan left. Figments could move quickly through the air, or even the vacuum. They both knew that alone, Zizan could perhaps reach a private ship in time to fly out beyond the shield and hyperjump away. An old Dione, however. Was there anything Kuna could do to help? Send a last broadcast, perhaps, exposing Winzik?